Save big on all your Halloween needs, all in the Kroger app. Mix and match 5 or more on Powerade, Campbell's Soup, Bar-S Franks, and more for 99 cents each with your card. Then get tender, fresh Heritage Farm boneless chicken breasts for $2.29 a pound with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
It's a Wednesday. I keep reminding folks it is football Wednesday because of fall break for the kids. They're having football games tonight. So, yeah, I'm going to be over to ball game, and it'll be fun. Weird, though, to play have a football Friday on a Wednesday, considering I have to work tomorrow morning as well. But Sean is here, Sean Christensen from the St. George Area Chamber of Commerce, as well as Nate Martinez. And, Nate, I had to write down your actual job title, Director of Operations and Policy. I don't even know what that means. I just know that's a big, long title, dude.
It's a doozy. The the font on my business cards are pretty small. So.
Little 8-point. Nobody can read it, but it's there. Well, welcome to the show, you guys. Thanks for coming.
Well, thanks for having us. That's great. Where are you going to go watch football tonight?
I am going over to Pineview Snow Canyon game is the one I will be doing on the radio.
So, sweet. That's awesome.
Should be a good game. I think they're fairly evenly matched, too. So, the other game over on ESPN tonight is Crimson Cliffs and Dixie. Dixie is heavy favorites in that one. Crimson is heavy favorites, and Dixie needs a win to try to get a good position in playoffs. So that'll be interesting, too. Maybe I think my game might be a little closer, though.
Okay. So who's got the home game between Crimson and
Dixie? It's at Dixie at Walbrook Stadium.
Yeah. Okay. Very cool.
In St. George, technically. At Crimson Cliffs, I don't know if you knew that the only school in the immediate area that is not in St. George, it's in Washington City, Crimson.
It is. That's actually the school my kids go to.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you a Mustang backer? Do you go to games and stuff?
Oh, yeah. We love it. I mean, we're all in. They're actually talking about changing, redoing the boundaries and stuff, which would put our home in Pineview. And since we moved to St. George, we've just been in Crimson, and we've gone all in on it.
Yeah.
So it's a tough thing to try to consider switching high schools. But fortunately, we only have one kid left in school. He's his junior year. Next year will be his senior year.
Oh, so he'd get to stay anyway.
Yeah, I think so. I think they let the senior finish out there.
You might have to. He's probably at this point driving, so he could just drive himself to school anyway.
Biggest piece of junk car you've ever seen in your life, Andy. We got to keep the kids humble. He drives a 2009 Hyundai Accent. No, it has one upgrade. It has air conditioning. Otherwise, it's the manual roll up and down windows. I guess it is an automatic.
I don't feel too bad considering some of the cars. Remember the cars we drove when we were 16? I had a 72 Toyota Corona Mark II.
I love
and
it.
And I got it. So a guy was giving it away because he couldn't get it to start. So that guy my dad worked with, and he said, yeah, he can have it. If he can get it started, it's all his. So I went and bought a new battery for it, which back then was like $25. Now it's $200. But, and it started right up. So
and you're good to go.
Drove it for a while. And then I had a 73 Dodge Polara.
Very nice.
Which was kind of a hot rod, but also kind of a piece of junk, too.
Yeah.
So how about you? Did you
have... So I started out with a 1978 Buick Regal.
All right, yeah.
And then I had a 1982 Chevy Silverado.
Oh, you got a picture.
But the engine had blown on it, and so my dad gave me the truck, said, you have to put a new engine in. And so I saved my money and bought an engine for it.
Nice.
Had it put in, and then... And then I ended my high school career with a 1985 Chevy Camaro.
Christensen had a Camaro. What did you say it was?
It was a 1985.
Okay.
V6 engine, just when they were starting to get into the electronic fuel ignition. And
nice.
Good
nice.
Times. I love
cars. I was a Mustang guy. I had a Mustang for a while.
That's great.
67 Mustang. It was a nice car. Nate, did you ever have a junker that you drove around in?
I was pretty fortunate. My grandparents got me my first car in high school. It was a 2008 Jeep Liberty. So not bad.
Nice. Oh yeah, that's a junk.
It completely fell apart at like 100,000 miles. Okay. Electrical issues, and I had to trade it in. I feel so accomplished, if anything, that I was able to afford a Wrangler. I was able to trade up and buy a Wrangler when I moved here to Utah. So. Nice.
The one thing I loved about cars back then, Sean, was we could work on them ourselves. They weren't so complicated. I mean, now you've got – I bought a Toyota Tundra about a year ago, and the guy said, yeah, there's 124 different computer chips in here. And I'm like, so if something breaks down, he goes, yeah, something breaks down, you're going to want to bring it in. You're not going to want to try to work on that yourself. I'm like, all righty then.
Well, the best part about a Toyota Tundra is it doesn't break down. So that, you don't end up taking it.
That's what I hear. That's why I bought it.
My mechanic the other day, I thought
about it. You have a Tundra as well?
I drive a Sequoia.
Oh, okay.
And the thing's got almost 200,000 miles
really?
On it.
Wow.
And it does not give me a lick of problems. It's incredible.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, I replace batteries, replace brakes and tires, change the oil, good to go.
That's about it, huh? Very nice. That's good, because mine has about 50,000 miles. So.
Oh, man. I got
ways to go, huh?
If I get rid of my Sequoia, I'll go with the Tundra, no doubt.
Nice. I love it.
Even though I think there's more fun things to be found in a Ford and in a Dodge and in a Chevy, gosh, those Tundras, they are good-looking trucks.
Somebody gave me a hard time, said, what are you buying a Japanese truck for? I said, you know that more of this Tundra was made in America than the Ford you're driving?
Yeah.
So, and they were like,
they
oh,
do a
really?
Lot of that in Kentucky, right?
Yeah,
I think it's Kentucky where they build a lot of the Tundras, so.
We could probably talk trucks all day here, talk cars all day on the show, but let's talk about some other stuff. First of all, the Chamber of Commerce, thanks you guys for being part of the community. I feel like, you know, St. George needs something that kind of is some glue to stick it all together, and you guys provide that opportunity, and I really love that.
So, well, I appreciate that. You know what? Southern Utah is just the most welcoming community, and I know there's strong feelings on both sides of growing and not growing, and and how busy things are. In fact, on the drive here, I had a friend who was heading over to the DMV, and he's like, "Man, it used to be a 20-minute visit. Now you got to wait an hour and a half." But I mean, we are such a welcoming and kind and innovative and entrepreneurial community that it is just inevitable. And my feeling on it is that let's embrace the growth and have a vested interest in making sure it's the right growth for Southern Utah. And if we do that, then we're going to build an unreal economy down here. I think unmatched in Utah. I think the day will come where Northern Utah looks down with jealousy beyond our weather.
Yeah.
At the economy that we've built down here. And so as long as we stay engaged and invested and we elect the right officials in place that also have that mindset, we're going to do the right thing. And when this county, I mean, it's been exploding. It's going to continue to explode. And so we just need to stay engaged in that, make sure we do it right.
And I think the other thing, too, is you hear this a lot, and I don't think people realize how special it is. When you talk about the federal leadership, you know, who's going to be president and things like that, then you look at Southern Utah and say, well, it affects us, yes, but it's not like we're different than the rest of the country. We're different than the rest of the world, really, here in Southern Utah. And I really believe that, you know, a lot of the things that affect everywhere else in the country, whether it's, you know, who's president or whatever, they don't affect us as much because we are different.
We are. And you know what's interesting? As I watch all this growth happen, I've had so many people, you know, of course, being the CEO and president of the chamber, a lot of people chat with me about the growth.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, gosh, we got all these people moving from California and from all these liberal states. I meet a ton of these people.
Right.
And when I talk with them, the vast majority are like, I moved here because your conservative lifestyle aligns with what I want.
Yeah.
And I'm getting out of California to get back to what I believe is the right way to run a county. And so we embrace these neighbors and bring them in and make them feel part of the community. We're gonna grow our, you know, the right way and keep the lifestyle that we're in love with.
I have some friends who moved from Simi Valley, and they were like, you know what, isn't California beautiful? And I'm like, yeah, it is absolutely gorgeous. And they said, everything about California is beautiful, except the politics.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why we left, and that's why we live in St. George now.
That's right.
So, Nate, we've been ignoring you. Sorry, we don't mean to ignore you, but as the Director of Operations and Policy, I know you have some unique – I'm sorry, I'm giving him a hard time about that. Tell us about this debate last week.
Debate was earlier this week, actually.
Earlier this week, rather.
Happy to show up and support that.
It feels like Friday. That's what I said.
It really does.
It's Wednesday. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, it's been a great week. That was the official debate put on by the Utah Debate Commission, and the only televised official debate down here in southern Utah. Mm-hmm. Went very well. It was produced excellently by the university and the debate commission. We were happy to show up and support that. That was for the congressional District 2. So right. We had Representative Celeste Malloy and her challenger, the Democrat Nathaniel Woodward from up north. And Price, I believe, is where he's from.
Mm-hmm. And tell me, first of all, was it well attended? And politics in Utah, we were talking about how unique we are in this county, right? Politics in Utah are unique in that 99% of the time the Republican is going to win because they align for the most part with the predominant religion. What about the debate? How did things go?
It was a pretty tame debate, I would say. Most of them usually are in southern Utah and just Utah in general. Nathaniel Woodward gave Representative Malloy a lot of flowers in that it was a civic debate, and she's one of the easiest people to run against because the discourse is so civil.
She's not a name caller. That's for sure.
She's not a name caller. She's not one to stand and argue. She just speaks the facts.
Right. Yeah.
And she's a lawyer.
They both are, actually. Yeah.
Are they both?
That's why it was very well thought out and well spoken. There was
but
no shouting and name calling.
I object, or Your Honor, baiting the witness, or anything like that.
No banging the gavel. And they did limit it to attendees since it was televised. However, they invited the public to view on the Debate Commission's public live feed. And it was televised on ABC4 and all the local stations.
So Celeste was on the show last week by phone, and she's going to be in person here, I think it's next Monday, here on the program. I love having her on the show. And you mentioned, Sean, one of the refreshing things about Celeste is she hasn't learned, and maybe this isn't a good way, to political speak. She just says what she says.
So, yeah. Yeah. When I hear her speak, I feel like I'm sitting in the jury box or the gallery at a trial. I mean, she speaks the facts. She's well thought out in her responses. And she doesn't get a lot of emotion behind it. Although, we did have her as a keynote speaker for our Element Awards, which recognize women in business.
Mm-hmm.
And she did get a little emotional with that one, talking about being a woman congressman, or congresswoman, I should say, and about her grandmother, who had inspired her. And that was the first time I'd ever seen some, you know, emotion in her speech come through where she, you know, that really got to her. It was a really special moment.
She has a little secret drink. She calls it a protein shake, but it's a Diet Dr. Pepper with peanuts in it. Her and Mello combined to bring me one, although I didn't want diet, regular Dr. Pepper with peanuts in it. I drank and I was like, it's all right.
That's a no-go.
It's all right. Nate, did we learn anything at the debate that we didn't already know? Or pretty much established?
I think it was pretty well established. They didn't go at each other too much. There was a bit of agreement on some issues of public lands, since those affect us out here in this rural area, Washington County. I would say they stuck largely to the platform pillars.
That's good. I had, you know, during the primary when it was Celeste and Colby Jenkins, I really felt like that, and Celeste ended up winning, and there was some controversy about postmarks and things like that, but she ended up winning, and I really felt like that you really couldn't go wrong with either one of those as far as representing the Republican Party, because I love Colby. He has his areas of expertise, foreign relations and intelligence, things like that. But his areas of expertise are different than Celeste and her areas of public lands and things like that. So it was that one I felt like we win-win situation either way.
I thought that was a really fun primary, and I thought two excellent candidates.
By the way, yes, my chair is shrinking on me. In case you're wondering if I'm getting shorter, yes, I am. We have a few chairs here, and apparently I have one right now that gets smaller and smaller.
Before long, your neck's going to be cricked back, and you're going to be speaking up to the mic.
my newsman Stockton last week. I had this particular chair and it kept getting smaller and smaller, and he was trying to do the news while I was shrinking, and it was rather distracting as he was trying to read the news. So, all right, tell us about, I got an email the other day, 47G. What is that? What about this whole program that you guys are talking about?
Yeah, so 47G formerly was UATA, which was the Utah Aviation.
Hey, while you talk, I'm going to see if I can fix my chair, so keep
yeah,
talking.
Yeah, you go. Aviation and Defense Association, and they renamed it to 47G about a year ago, and they are doing tremendous things under their new CEO. His name's Aaron Starks. Brother to Ryan Starks, who's our managing director of the Governor's Office of Economic Opportunity, and also his brother Steve Starks, who's the CEO of Larry H. Miller Company. Anyway, 47G under his leadership has really taken a fantastic direction, and so they're putting on a summit here in about a week up north, and that summit's going to be focused on aviation, space, defense, cybersecurity, how artificial intelligence mixes into all of that. He's got some really cool things to talk about. We're actually going to have him in town in November to chat a little bit about the Olympics that are coming up, and I don't want to say the edict, the request that he's had from Governor Cox to help with transportation and amplify the transportation opportunities during the Olympics. And so there's some really cool things they have in the works that maybe we'll bring him by and have him chat a little bit.
That would be
radio.
Cool. It's not just science fiction anymore. I don't know if you saw the Elon Musk revealed these robots that he's putting out that are supposed to help with household chores and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They look a lot like the robots in the movie I, Robot.
Yeah, yeah.
Book originally written by Isaac Asimov, but... in fact, I think the producer of the movie said, "Hey, Elon, I want my design back," or something like that. But still, it's amazing what technology. How do you think? It's a big question, Sean. But how do you think technology is going to change things here in Southern Utah? The AI and robots and things like that.
I think that. Well, first off, I mean, we've got a large community that does hire in a lot of cleaning services, right? And mm-hmm. So I believe that we are going to see a shift in our cleaning services industry, both on a commercial level and a residential level.
By a shift, you mean we're going to be seeing a lot of that automated actual robots? And
yeah, I think within the next 10 years, there are going to be... I mean, you've already got a Roomba that can go around and do all your sweeping and all of your vacuuming for you.
And we have a little, I wouldn't call it a robot, but a little machine for our pool that vacuums the bottom of the pool on its own. Just goes
it's absolutely
around,
a robot.
Same kind of thing.
They even have them where they float on top and they skim.
Yeah,
and they
the skimmers,
use solar
yeah.
power on and they'll skim the top of your pool. It's incredible. So yeah, there's absolutely going to be a shift in the industry. Do I think it's going to cost jobs? I don't. I think it'll create more jobs. It'll create more opportunities because all of those, but it'll be different jobs where they're servicing those robots and they're fixing them because replacing them. Honestly, Andy, I hope we see a shift from in our society of we kind of a throwaway society, right? Something quits working, and rather than repair it, we just throw it away. We buy a new one.
Oftentimes it costs almost as much to fix it as it is to get a new one, and that's, I think, one of the reasons why.
Yeah, and we feel that way, and I had a recent experience just this week.
Mm-hmm.
I had a garage door opener start having problems. First thing I did, look for a new garage door opener, and I was like, okay, $229. Well, for $150, I brought out Jones Paint and Glass. They came out. They worked on my garage door opener, and it's all fixed. It's up. It's running. And I was out at $150. And they straightened my door, and they put in new cables. They did all this stuff, and it was like a $125 service call. And I gave them a $20 tip because he just felt like he went so above and beyond that the $125 seemed like a pittance, you know.
Nice.
So anyway, yes, I think that repair will become a big part of that.
It's interesting because it's going to create new industries. You know, like you said, fixing these robots and tuning them up and all those things. And so if you're, say, an office cleaner, we have a service that comes and cleans our office, you know, once a week. And so if you're an office cleaner, you might be like, I'm going to lose my job. But you make a good point in that there, you might have to shift what you do. You might have to change the way you approach things, but it's not going to make all the jobs go away.
No. Yeah, that's it. So and we've seen that in several other several other industries, we've seen how we adapt as humanity to artificial intelligence and to robots. We adapt to that, and new jobs come available because of that. And so it'll be incumbent on us to stay ahead of it as far as education goes and point our kids in the right direction.
I talked to Adam Snow, County Commissioner, yesterday about the golf tournament, Black Desert Championship. What he thought, I asked him what he thought it would do to the county having that here, if there were going to be immediate effects, if it was going to be long-term. He was more of the feeling that it was going to be a long-term thing, especially with tourism, but eventually also with growth. What are your thoughts about, both you guys, about the effects of the golf tournament being here?
I think they're tremendous. That we saw so many people from out of town and from within the state come on down here to Utah. The response on social media was tremendous. I saw it everywhere. Mm-hmm. I think not that we need to be put on the map, but it really shone a light on Southern Utah having that tournament here in Washington County.
Yeah, we might have gone from a little black dot on the map. Now we're like a red dot on the map. It's getting bigger, Sean.
Yeah, I mean, I would say from a golf perspective, it has shown a whole new light of what Southern Utah has to offer. We've been known for our national parks. We've been known for Snow Canyon. And we've been known for the beauty. And now to show that we have world-class golf available down here, it's going to change the game for us. And listen, As the president of the chamber, I'm obviously very pro-growth. I want to see our economy thrive. I want to see the business owners we represent do everything that they've ever dreamed of doing for their business. And it's the kind of a throwaway term, responsible growth. But if you really think through what responsible growth is, it is showing our strengths and then building upon those strengths, and golf is one of those. And Black Desert's the newest game to town, but they're not the only one, right? And so with 14 golf courses in our county, it's absurd how many golf courses. So I believe that there are people around the world and people back east and throughout the United States that now look at Southern Utah and are like, holy smokes, this is a destination for golf. I think it's going to be a big change for us.
Yeah, we're so lucky to have what we have here. You know, I was thinking about, you were talking about responsible growth. People need to understand, this is America. If you own land, you're allowed to build on that land. Growth is going to happen. Whether you want it or not, this is America. Growth is going to happen. So doing it responsibly is the best way to do it, because you can't say, no, you can't come here anymore. That's un-American.
Doesn't work that way. Yeah. That is very un-American. It's the most un-American thing I've ever heard anybody say, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah.
The freedom of America is to choose where you want to live, or if you don't like where you live, find a place that you want to live and move there and make a life there. And so, yeah, we've just got to be able to do it in a way that creates that community that we love so much.
Okay, got only about a minute or so left. Tell me about this event you have coming. You said there's a luncheon or something coming up?
Yep, Nate will give you a rundown on that.
There is a luncheon today at the hospital, yep.
Okay.
This is a monthly policy lunch sponsored by Intermountain Health, hosted on their campus. This month we're having a speaker from Southwest Utah Public Health talking about some things that make this community great, like we were talking about earlier, promoting community health and employee health, some of the programs that they're running. This is our monthly Bills, Rights, and Bites policy lunch.
It's Bills, Rights, and Bites.
Yeah, ain't that catchy, right? Yeah. Sponsored by Intermountain Health. They provide the lunch and the space, and we provide the entertainment, the speaker for the event.
Dr. Blodgett, or who's
it's going to be Dave Heaton?
Dave Heaton. Okay,
yes.
Yeah, he's a regular. He every Thursday at 7:55, Dave comes and talks about some of the health issues going on here on the show. So
he's a great guy,
great guest. Yeah, he'll provide a lot of information for you, a lot of really cool information.
Well, and that's the thing. Our Bills, Rights, and Bites, it is not just for chamber members, and the lunch is complimentary of Intermountain Health. If you've ever eaten in the cafeteria over there.
He just said free lunch, folks.
That's right. Free lunch, and it's at the Select Health Auditorium. They seat 130 people there, and we would love to fill that place up. Run out of lunch. We promise to make good to anybody that doesn't get one.
Intermountain Health is where it's at, right in the hospital? In the
Select Health Auditorium is across the street.
Across the street, okay.
Right
next to the Imaging Center.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's where their Imaging Center is.
Unfortunately,
right
I've been to the Imaging Center. Get my knee scoped and stuff, or my knee looked at. But guys, thanks for coming on today. So much cool information. And again, Sean, like you said, we're going to grow. Just right now, deal with it, folks. We're going to grow, but we need to do it responsibly.
Yeah.
So
get engaged. Good. and be part of the process. That's why our city councils are open, and it's for the public to be part of the process. So help us out.
Thank you, Nate. Thank you, Sean. Appreciate you guys.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy, 937 on KDXU. Dave Romer is with me. He's a modern warrior. What's up, Dave?
How's it going? Good to see you. Having me back on.
I like that vest. I got to give me one of those.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah,
thanks.
Pretty cool. He's got a modern warrior vest on. Anyway, wanted to talk for a few minutes about the home defense. Now, a lot of people buy alarms, you know, the alarm system, mm-hmm. they have a sign out front, you know, and supposedly the sign is as big a deterrent as actually having the alarm. Most people I know have some kind of video surveillance in their house, but even if you get through all that, how are you going to protect yourself at home? I happen to keep, for me, I have a firearm that I keep handy at all times. I'm not paranoid, I'm just careful. Although there are people out there that say that is a paranoid thing to do. I also have a sign on my back window that says, in this house we believe in God and firearms, and if you enter unlawfully, you might get to meet both tonight.
So yeah, it sends a message, right?
Yeah. Tell me about kind of your thoughts, Dave, on home safety. What is foremost in, what should be foremost in people's minds?
Yeah, I mean, the most likely scenario you have to deal with is just going to be a little more petty theft type crime stuff, in the sense that they're not there to cause harm, and in fact, if there's any risk of anything like that going on, they don't want the potential ramifications of that. So
yeah,
the moment it doesn't seem like a soft target anymore, they run away.
Yeah,
that's the most likely. That's the most common type probing. Try to see if something's unlocked. See if it's not armed. Hey, I've got time. It's empty. We can do what we want. A lot of those break-ins are during the day because they assume people are going to work.
Yeah.
Right. That's the most likely thing that you'll have. And even if you're home, like the moment they realize someone's home, typically they run. Right. I think for the mindset of most of us that at least appreciate firearms and what they're for, you're hoping for that scenario, but you're expecting the worst and being prepared for the worst, right?
Yeah.
It definitely happens where you have someone that either is intentionally trying to cause harm or just doesn't care what gets in their way, and that's really the scenario that we're gearing up for, that we're worried about. Hopefully, those people show up when you're not home. Right, your alarm system can take care of that. The cops can come. Hopefully, they snag them, but no one's going to get hurt. Right, you're fine. That's the ideal scenario if that does happen to you. What gets rough is if you or your family is home, and then one of those people shows up. You always hear people talking about, "Hey, get a shotgun, you know, pump it when they come in, and that'll make them run away." Well, if someone doesn't care, or they're not in the right mind, or they're there for you,
you just told
them what you've got and where you are. You haven't scared them away, right? So for the first type, yeah, that's going to work. But you don't know which one it is until you get a little further down that line, right? So yeah, I mean, I absolutely use firearms as part of a home deterrence. The goal isn't to try to find an excuse to shoot someone. It's there in case
protection.
Yeah. They don't run away, right? They're there. I've got a family there. My wife can protect herself against some stuff on her own without a weapon, but my kids sure can't. You know, I've got a 9-month-old and 3.5-year-old. They're not exactly fending off somebody, right?
No,
so
not at all.
That's the onus is definitely on me and my wife to take care of that. So it's putting those things in perspective. I mean, that's why it's there. Again, you're not looking for an excuse to shoot somebody, right? Which is a common misconception, right?
Yeah, that's true.
A lot of anti-gun people think you're looking for the opportunity. That's not what it is.
No, we don't want to. Yeah.
But yeah, preventing serious bodily harm or death to you and your family, that's a very prudent thing to do, in my opinion, to gear up for.
So what would you recommend as a firearm to have in your home for self-protection? I know, like, my whole life I shot rifles. I'd never, until I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago, I'd never really shot it. I think I, you know, once in fun, outside, whatever, but I'd never actually been trained in a sidearm.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, that was a new thing. But I always just said, well, I can do it because, you know, I played cops and robbers as a kid and I, right. I shot rifles. Right. So surely I'd be good at a pistol. But it took some training and some learning. Would you recommend someone have a pistol or you mentioned a shotgun a minute ago?
Right. It's very situationally dependent. It has a lot to do with you and what's going on in your house. The first thing that I will say on that is what you're proficient with. If you're not proficient with a handgun, then don't go buy a handgun for home defense.
Yeah, unless you plan on getting proficient.
If you can't shoot it well, that's not the pick, right? Yeah, and same thing. If you're not familiar or comfortable with a rifle, then don't pick a rifle. That's not a good scenario. Yeah. By definition, if you're actually employing it, we're talking life and death. You need to be ready and proficient with that in order to employ it in such a way that you can take care of your threat and also not also endanger your family any more than they already are by this intruder. So that's the first thing. Make sure you are proficient or going to be before you start implementing it. That being said, long guns are a lot easier to shoot well than handguns. You have more points of contact. You have more ways to mitigate recoil. It's easier to get optics and stuff like that on there, which make it easier to aim, that also aren't moving on you while you shoot. Yeah. So traditionally, that is a lot easier for people to learn how to shoot well. A big factor is shotguns. There's a misconception that you just point in the general direction and you hit your target.
That's what people believe.
It's not true. it takes a fair amount of distance if you're using, say, buckshot, for instance, for that to spread enough to completely fill a hallway. Most of us don't have hallways, you know, 30, 40 yards long. Right. Most of us don't.
Yeah.
Maybe you do. Maybe that works. But I do not. I can't bank on that, right? And it's twofold. That shot is spreading the further it gets from you. Right. And so, yes, it's not enough to fill an entire hallway. So you can't just randomly point and shoot and say job's done. You actually do need to aim. Conversely, though, because that size of projectile, quote unquote, effectively is changing at all times, you actually need to be more proficient with a shotgun than you do with a rifle in order to use that well, if there's any risk of hostage or something like that. So like for me, I have kids. I have to go. They're not in my room, right? So if somebody comes in, it is certainly possible they get to my kids before I do, right? So I have to be ready to engage somebody if they are holding my child and trying to use them as a shield, right? So if I use a shotgun, that shot is spreading. I need to know how much that's going to spread at any given distance and be able to offset my aim from this person to engage them, to hit them and not my kid.
Right.
And that is something that takes a lot of training to understand and figure out. A lot. You can get there, but it takes an awful lot, and you've got to be able to stay calm enough to be able to actually calculate that in the heat of the moment.
You've got to measure it in your brain as it's happening.
Absolutely. So there's a very common misconception that is all you need, and it's easy, and it's just job done. You don't have to work very hard. I would argue the exact opposite. You've got to work a lot harder on a shotgun if there's any threat of another person there than you would with anything else. So I opt for a rifle, personally. I use rounds that aren't going to penetrate as much, a little bit quieter, so that I can communicate easier with my wife. If we have to yell out commands or tell somebody to do something, we're not blowing our ears out. And she has one, too. The other part's going to be your strategy. In that scenario, before we had kids, our strategy was cool. We hear something, get the stuff out, open the safe door. You hunker behind the safe door, which is effectively bulletproof, and use that as cover. I'll hunker down another area. So we have fire coming from two different positions, and we're just going to hone in on the door, which is the only point of entry.
Right.
I don't have to hunt around my house. I don't have to go find you. Right. The more you start clearing rooms, the more risk you have of getting taken out yourself. It's not a perfect science. It looks real sexy in the movies, all the guys moving around, everything right on time. That takes a lot of people and a lot of training to get proficient, and it's still not perfect, right? So especially if you're doing this by yourself, you go into a room, you've got to clear those corners. What if you guess the wrong corner that you clear first?
Yeah.
They have the jump on you, right? And so, and there's no way to know. There's no way to know. So the more you can hunker down, the better. Get 911 on the line, have them start coming, and hunker down and just protect your fatal funnel on your room if possible. For me, it's a little bit different because I have kids.
I was going to say, things changed for you a couple years ago.
Once we had kids, that strategy doesn't work anymore because I can't just abandon them in a different part of the house and say, hope it works out. Yeah. Like, that's not going to work. So, yes, my wife's hunkering down. unless we really think we need to get both of us going so we can cover each other's rears. But my first move is I'm hauling as fast as I can while clearing corners and doing everything as fast as I can in my kids' room. I'm grabbing my kids and I'm bringing them back to my wife, and then we're hunkering down. You know, that's really the goal. Again, you're not, it's just because someone's in your house doesn't mean you have to go find them.
Right.
Right.
And hopefully they leave.
Right. Yeah. Hopefully they leave. Get 911 on the phone, somebody, even if you can't talk, dial it, let it ring. If they can't hear anything, like, that's an emergency trigger for them. They're going to send somebody to figure out what in the world's going on.
They can ping your location.
Right. Yeah, so it's worth doing.
Got to get a commercial break in. Talking with Dave Roemer, Modern Warrior, here on KDXU and the Andy Griffin Show. Be right back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU. Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. Andy Griffin Show, Dave Roemer with Modern Warriors. Our firearms expert is with us today. And I have not asked for text, but I appreciate somebody texting in. So before I read the text, I'm going to invite you to text me or call in. My text line is 467-5842. So 435 area code and 467-5842. If you'd like to call into the show, it's 673-5890. This text, Dave, says, can you address a concern of a rifle round going through the neighbor's house from yours through the wall? And to me, the first thing I thought of when I read that text, Dave, was that goes back to the kind of the original rules of a firearm, right?
Yes.
And you know, what's behind you when if you elect to fire a firearm?
Yeah, know your target, what lies beyond and in between. Yeah. It's an important one. Not just for rounds that hit, but also the ones that miss, right? That's very important.
How far will a bullet travel through? How thick do the walls have to be? How big a factor is that?
Well, there's a lot of factors on it. One of that's going to be round selection, right? Mm-hmm. And both in caliber and in actual projectiles within that caliber. And that's one of the reasons that, like, I have opted for a 300 blackout. I'm shooting a 300 blackout subsonic. It is not known for its penetration. It's known for being quiet and hitting hard up close, dumping energy quick. Mm-hmm. Which does a few things, right? One, it makes it quiet so I can communicate easily with my spouse. But it also, it's mitigating the issue on wall penetration, both exiting the house and within the house. That's still a factor within the house as well. But it's also, it's going to hit hard. It's going to dump energy better on target. But it's not, you're not worried about over penetration nearly as much. It's not that you ignore it, but it's not nearly as big a factor. Those things, they open up quick. And they start deflecting and losing energy fast when they start going through walls with studs and any kind of reinforcement, especially if you have like stucco, which is really common here. That helps mitigate some of that over penetration.
What about your average gun though? Like I have a Glock 19. What is the penetration for some? If I were to shoot it and it went through a wall, where would it end up?
Part of that's going to be if you're using hollow points or just normal ball ammo. Hollow points are going to slow down much quicker, which is good because it's opening up. It will depend on wall construction, how big the gaps are, how much insulation, if it's hitting studs or not, all sorts of various factors. And you can go online and see testing because most of us don't have the opportunity to just rip a bunch of rounds through walls to see what it does.
No, we don't want
right?
to do that. No.
most of us don't get that opportunity. But there is a lot of video testing of this online of different calibers and stuff, which is good to look at before you choose. But 9mm, it is not uncommon if you dodge any studs. It's mostly drywall. It's getting through a couple walls. That's not uncommon. 5.56, if you're using the green tip, the military stuff, it tends to get through quite a few walls. Wow. Now it can deflect easily. It's lightweight. So even if it skims, like a stud in the wall or something, that will deflect it and change trajectory, which can be good and bad.
Right.
I mean, if you got a second floor and you're shooting and it's in line with where someone would be, it deflects. Well, it's probably not going to be someone in those rooms, but did it just deflect upstairs? I don't know. Could have gone through the floor.
Yeah.
It's another factor to think about. But those are big things. So typically people are using soft points or frangibles or hollow points or something like that in the houses to minimize that issue because they do either disintegrate or dump energy so fast that they're mitigating how many walls it can go through, which I do think is an important consideration. And like we said, knowing your target, what lies beyond in between, if I'm shooting and there's a window behind them that then goes outside, that has a high risk of then going to someone else's house.
Yeah.
If I'm shooting and I've got three rooms that has to go through, and then an exterior wall, and then bridge the gap from my yard to their yard, and then go through their wall.
Pretty unlikely.
With a 300 blackout, that's not happening. I can guarantee that's not going to make it there, right? So that's pretty comfortable. But yeah, if they're upstairs, I got a big window there that overlooks. Hey, you better make sure that lands or change your angle, because that's going to be a problem.
The most common gun, I had one. I think everyone had, every guy I know had a 22 rifle when they were 12, 13 years old. That's to me, that was the most common gun. And he did ask specifically about rifles. So what about something like a 22?
22 does not have a ton of penetration on hard objects. It's not an overly powerful round. It does move pretty quick, but it's also a very soft lead projectile. Unlike more traditional rifle rounds where you have a lead core, but then you have this really hard copper jacketing that holds everything together, retains mass really well. That works really well for terminal ballistics, so actually dumping energy and zipping through various layers or barriers. 22 doesn't have that, and so as soon as it hits something hard, it mushrooms, kind of breaks up into pieces, which then you don't get the penetration, which is great for that scenario. You don't want it going crazy far. Now the flip side is, you know, you get certain materials or layers and stuff like that. You can have issues with penetration there. You've seen that even with 9mm. Some of these states, they get really, really cold. Guys run around with huge puffy jackets and multiple layers and stuff. There have been some, you know, documented issues of stuff just not penetrating well enough, which is kind of wild to think about as well.
So the average, you know, and I don't know why he's asking this reason, but I'm curious. Say you have a neighbor and SWAT or police come to their house and there ends up being shots fired from maybe police weapons, maybe from the suspect. Mm-hmm. And I live next door to that. Is that something that I should be really worried about? That, you know, maybe some of those bullets are going to end up in my house?
I would be concerned. Yeah, I mean, law enforcement tends to do particular round selection because they know they're operating in a civilian environment, and especially here it's an urban civilian environment. They know that that's an issue. There is appropriate round selection taken into consideration for that. They're not just running, you know, light armor penetrators everywhere like the military typically does.
Right.
It doesn't work well for this scenario. And that's, so they typically don't carry that. They are thinking about that. This is just
say that's probably part of the training, right?
It's not something that they've just kind of skipped over, right? Yeah. This isn't well in consideration. But still, you don't know what's going to happen. So, I mean, yeah, they shoot, and that guy was standing right by a window. Well, even with that, it's going to have more penetration than say, if it was in an interior room. They don't get to pick where the suspect is, right? So it is something I would be very cognizant of. If I'm in my house and I see police rolling in next door, which I have seen, I'm hunkering down on the other side of the house and putting as many walls or safe doors or anything between us as possible till that's over, just to play it safe. And it's not trusting the cops or anything like that. You just don't know. You know, there's an element of chance and luck in all of this stuff. And unfortunately, that does play a role.
All it takes is one stray bullet, you know, that went maybe through a window and came into your house at a high rate of speed.
Right.
And bullets are unforgiving. I mean, once they do what they do, that's it. You know, they have no conscience.
No, they don't get to make a decision if that's the right call or not. So
Dan, in the last 2 minutes, I did want to ask you about ammo pricing right now. Inflation has been nuts. I mean, you buy a loaf of bread, it used to be, you know, $1.75. It's $4 now.
Mm-hmm.
Has inflation really hit the ammo industry?
It's gone up some. It's a little hard. When COVID hit is when it really spiked.
Right.
And it went really out of control.
I remember that.
It's taken a long time, but it has slowly kind of come back down. Availability is a lot better. I mean, we're ordering pallets at a time, getting stuff in pretty good quantities.
I remember there were shortages during COVID.
There's a while it wasn't a case of money. We just couldn't order stuff, you know, and that was a problem. Yeah. Now we can get it easily. The prices have come down a lot. Is it what it was pre-COVID? No. It's not. It's definitely noticeably more expensive, but it's much closer to that than it has been in ages. I haven't seen it spiking back up yet with the election. Hopefully it doesn't. It wouldn't be uncommon, but hopefully it doesn't. There's enough availability out there that I don't think it'll go up too much, even if it does. But it's hard to predict. Yeah,
I had a friend who had, I think it's called a Mosin Russian rifle.
Mosin the gun.
And It was so fun to shoot. One of the most fun firearms I've ever shot. Problem is, it was like $1.50 a shell to shoot that thing. So, yeah, you had to take out a loan if you went out shooting with it. So.
At least all day, right?
Well, Dave, thanks for coming on. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, my friend.
Yeah, it's fun.
Dave Roman, Modern Warriors. I'm Andy Griffin. Be back tomorrow. Nanette Billings, Hurricane City, will be joining me live on the air. We'll also hear from Joe with Advanced Windows. Thanks for listening, everybody.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.